Yes, prior to coming to the University of Alberta, I spent nearly 7 years as the senior research microbiologist in the Office of Research and Development with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And in that capacity, I was leading work on microbial risk assessment associated with new policies and regulations for recreational water, for drinking water, and most recently on water reuse. So that was the main function of my activities there, was developing the research to underpin regulation and policy change.
And you have quite a connection too to Australia and New Zealand.
Well, I'm an Australian by citizenship, and prior to joining the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, I was professor in the School of Civil and Environmental Engineering at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia, where I led a major team on water policy there, risk assessment, and that underpinned a number of activities with the World Health Organization. It took me to working in Malaysia and in Sweden over several years and developing risk-based policies there for novel ways of managing urban and rural and agricultural waters.
And now here you are in Alberta at the University of Alberta. You've been here just a few months. What is it that brought you here?
I'm particularly excited about the opportunity here in Alberta simply because there's an amazing amount of growth occurring. There is real need to manage our water resources for not only the mining and agricultural, but also the urbanization that is occurring, particularly in the province and the major cities that are developing here. So it's a complete package of what I'm most interested in doing. So dealing with water reuse, but seeing that in the broader context of energy conservation, energy recovery, nutrient recovery from our residuals from sewers, to basically put that back into food production. So there's the whole package that's available here in the province.
Well, one of the exciting things, too, is that you've now been appointed the Alberta Innovates Health Solutions Translational Health Chair to study water. Tell me about that.
Yes, the Translational Health Chair is a fascinating development here that the provincial government has put together. It really helps in that I can not only work at the research level and work on policies from an academic's point of view, but actually working basically day-to-day with people within the Alberta government, both in health and in the environment sectors in particular, and developing with them how we can deal with a more proactive way of managing our water and public health issues.
So in this chair then, is it for a substantial length of time?
Yes, the chair is given for a 7-year period, and beyond that, the university has me in a tenured position here to keep things continuing after that 7-year period.
What are some of the major issues that you are going to be looking at?
There are three main sort of areas of focus. So the first is, rather than doing what we've done in the past, pulling water out of the ground or out of our rivers, putting it through the city and generating wastewater that contains nutrients and other contaminants that get discharged back into the waterways, we've now realized, even here in what we think is a water-rich part of the world, in the city of Calgary, for example, they're beginning to reach their discharge limits for nutrients back into the Bow and Elbow rivers, as a particular example. So how do we deal with recovering those nutrients, putting them back to where they came from in food production, but also in recycling the water back for municipal use. Less than 20% of the water that we actually receive at our homes is needing to be of drinking water quality. For toilet flushing, clothes washing, garden irrigation purposes, for example, that water can be of a lesser quality in the sense from a drinking point of view. And the question really is, how do we make sure it's safe? And how do we measure that level of safety and the production of that water in an ongoing, sustainable way? So my research is based around what we call microbial risk assessment to look at the pathogens that may be found in waters and to what degree is safely treating that water so it is of safe use, what we call fit for purpose.
Can you break down some of that research then for me?
Yes, so in particular, we're working with the city of Calgary at the moment, for example, and understanding the range of pathogens. These are disease-causing microorganisms that come in the raw sewage from just infected people within the community. So some of those diseases like Norwalk virus or norovirus are winter-type infections. Others like Campylobacter are more summertime. And we don't really have a good understanding of the range in those numbers in the coming in the raw sewage. So that's one part of the project there. Another part is in the various treatment steps that are used, what is the day-to-day variation in the removal of those actual pathogens? We don't have good data on that. And more importantly, we don't have good surrogates that tell us, are we removing those organisms on a day-to-day basis? We measure what we call compliance testing at the end, like the drinking water or the discharge water, and that's really a grab sample, not really frequent enough to tell us if there's been a plant upset. So when we start, as we say, closing the loops, turning that water back into the community for reuse purposes, it becomes particularly important to make sure that water is safe every minute of the day, not every day or every few days of the week when we might normally have taken a compliance type sample. So our work is linking the pathogens to surrogates that can be measured more or less in real time to inform the managers of those plants and to make sure that they're functioning as described.
Once you get all this information together and you see that there's a problem, how far can you go in pushing that in order to either change public policy or to work with either industry or whoever's required to make the necessary changes, whether it's through equipment or engineering new things? How far can you go with your research?
The research is really targeting, as I was beginning to say before, at three main levels. So one is the overarching policy. So we're moving towards what we call a performance-based regulatory framework, which means we're open to any sort of scientific innovation as long as you can demonstrate it removes X, Y, Z contaminants day in and day out. So this performance-based approach is starting with what we call drinking water safety plans here in the province, and this is the first province in North America to bring in this approach. And the research we're doing is to take that beyond drinking water production to water reuse and for recreational purposes as well. So the research is one at the policy framing level, and at the second stage, when we have these so-called water safety plans, the research is underpinning the actual specific performance within a particular plant or treatment system or watershed, so it's tailored to that particular location. So that's where it's very much applied research to that. And more fundamental basic research we're doing comes back to, in fact, another group of organisms which we were much less aware of. These are what we call the environmental pathogens. So rather than those that come from sewage or fecal contamination, these are bacteria largely that grow in piped water, particularly in warm systems, in large institutions and buildings. For example, Legionella and Legionnaires' disease is an example of this type of organism. So our research is understanding the ecology of these organisms. What are the conditions that lead to the growth of mycobacteria and Legionella environmental pathogens? Because if we look at the actual health burden to society from water-based pathogens, these environmental pathogens are actually now becoming more important and more costly to society than our traditional ones that we've now largely learnt to manage.
Who are your partners in this that will be working with you?
So there's a broad range of partnerships I've been working on in my first sort of 6 months here, particularly with the provincial government, both on the health and environmental side. So I've got key links there in more on the policy framing side of the story, working with EPCOR here in Edmonton and the City of Calgary, down in Calgary, at their waterworks, and both for treating drinking water and for wastewater. So building alliances with those particular entities, because at the end of the day, we need to make sure that what we're developing here is feasible and practical and can be implemented to produce more economically safer water. So it's vital to be working at the beginning with the major users, and they're two good representations for that. The work I'm doing is, whilst principally, of course, is funded for Albertans, it's very much broader. If we look globally, Very sadly, half the world's population today, for example, do not have access to sanitation. They basically have open defecation in the field. And there is no way that we could have the rest of the world using water resources as we do here in Canada and Alberta, basically flushing our feces away with good quality drinking water. There is just not that availability of water resource globally. So what we can pioneer here are alternatives that not only lead the world, but give inspiration to the rest of the world that, hey, here in developed, wealthy, well-managed areas, we aspire to these less water-based approaches to dealing with sanitation. And furthermore, we can actually make money from this because we treat these no longer as wastes, but as resources. So the nutrients go back to agriculture at a high value. The energy we can recover from our current sewers, as a good example, represent close to 7% of the total electricity production in this country. And at the moment, we're using electricity just to get rid of it. So there are enormous economies to be made here, both in innovation of technology and through resource recovery, making it far more economic for us to better manage our resources, not just drinking water, but the energy embedded within the waste streams that we've traditionally produced, and indeed the nutrient streams that need to go back to agriculture.
Nicholas, my experience in the past has been that even though people recognize that there's a need for change, it always seems to come down to the dollars and cents that they don't want to pay for the changes to infrastructure that are needed. How are you going to deal with that?
Yes, sadly, at the moment, we are paying dearly for infrastructure now that has come to the end of its operational life. So many of the sewers and drinking water mains in North American cities have reached their 70 to 100-year lifetime. And rather than spending the billions of dollars that are necessary to replace them, if we think about what those water conveyance systems are doing and put an economic value to that, we would not rebuild these infrastructure. As a good example, for example, as firefighting. We currently design our drinking water distribution for firefighting flow on the premise that we must fight fires with potable water. We do not need to today to do that necessarily. We could pay for by having much less water delivered to homes, which is only the water we'd need for drinking purposes, and recycling treated grey water within the homes and buildings, for example. We would not only save enormously on energy and water resources, but we'd be able to recover nutrients in that system and pay back to the system, both in energy recovery and in nutrient recovery. And we would be able to cover the costs of having, for example, aircraft to deliver in certain areas for firefighting. And indeed, there are other technologies, such as electrostatic fire prevention and suppression systems, that we could mandate within our buildings. That would really make obsolete the need to dump massive amounts of potable water in firefighting, as an example.
So it's a little bit of a mindset change or a paradigm shift.
It is totally, and I think the starting point is to say, what is the best way for resource recovery? And when we think of resources, we think not only the water, but the energy and nutrients and other reclaimable organic compounds that go into societies and at the moment are flushed down the toilet, more or less, and go as waste. So we frame it around resource recovery. Then we look at the system structure to enable that. We would not mix everything into a sewer. If we look at one technology alone, for example, urine diversion toilets, and why would we do that is simply that 80% of the nitrogen that we consume in our diets ends up in the urine stream. And why dilute that 1% of the urine stream with 99% of what else is in the sewer, and then at the end of the day try to remove those nutrients by wastewater treatment? It's not a very sensible approach. Alternatively, we can keep that stream separate, collect it, and take it back out into agriculture and use it as a fertilizer. And I spent some 10 years in Sweden working with colleagues there to make sure that that is possible and to do both safely and sustainably.
So you'd collect your pee at home?
Yes. In essence, you have either urinals and urine diversion toilets. And that sounds a little complicated, but it's in essence, if you look into the bowl of a urine diversion toilet, it looks like a conventional pedestal, except at the front there's a little bit of a weir and a second hole, if you like, for the urine to go down a separate bit of plumbing to a storage tank, where it can either go in a vacuum or pressure sewer pumped out at night or every few months to a central location, where it can then be taken out to agriculture and directly injected into the ground as a fertilizer.
Thank you very much, Nicholas.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I look forward to future discussions.